Okay, so my talk is a little less detailed than Chiang's. I'm going to be focusing on what we did in real time and what we're doing now, what we hope to do with the coupled modeling, and focuses on the verification across the atmosphere and ocean variables. Okay, so our model setup during real time was atmosphere from MN5 and from WARF. And our ocean was the 3D PWP model, which was initialized with the HICOM and satellite SST so that we could depict the mesoscale ocean features that are important for the typhoon intensification. The UMCM version, which is the MN5 atmosphere, also ran with the WaveWatch 3 wave model. And we're developing the wave model for SeaWARF as well. And we're also moving towards using HICOM instead of the 3D PWP for the reanalysis product. Another thing I want to point out is that the atmosphere model runs down to 1.3 kilometers, which is very important to get the inner core structure of the storm, right? Okay, so you may have seen this website during the field program. Basically, we put all of our fields on this website, and we also uploaded them to the EOL server, and the ocean fields also to itop.org. So we have atmosphere fields, wind, I show here, and in the ocean we have the SST and waves. We have the significant wave height and wave direction. Okay, this is an animation showing a forecast of Typhoon Finaki. Initialized on the 16th 0Z, and this is from UMCM, so it's the MN5 based forecast, and you're looking at the model composite reflectivity, that's the gray, and the sea surface temperature and the currents. Okay, and this is showing the wave model fields, so you're looking at again the storm structure from the radar, radar reflectivity, and also the significant wave height, and wave direction, and wind direction. Now, one thing I want to point out is that there are places where the waves and the winds are going in opposite directions. And that's especially true in the backside of the storm. So that's where some scientists expect to find the turbulence may be important for how much mixing occurs in that part of the storm. Okay, so first, quick verification of typhoons themselves. These are the cases I used to verify. Lupit from the dry run, and Finaki and Megi from the actual field program. And these were challenging storms to get right. So track and intensity, in terms of track, the forecasts were comparable to other high resolution forecasts. And compared to intensity, what I want to point out is that the operational global models, intensity errors were huge, 40 to 50 knots. So the operational global models are way too weak. And that also affects the forcing on the ocean. In the operational ocean models, and also if you would use these global models, GFS, NOGAPS, even ECMWF, then you may not be getting enough forcing into the ocean. In contrast, the high resolution models, and they include COAMS-TC here too, so they have much better forecasts in terms of intensity. Okay, now what about structure? My structure talk about rainfall and the wind field of the storm. Now, the rain here, the rain can impact the ocean by kind of freshening the mixed layer, and that may compete with the upwelling of higher salinity water. So that's a potential impact. Notice the rain structure, the rain asymmetry is to the left side of the storm. And the high-resolution models are very capable at getting the asymmetry right compared to the satellite data. The satellite data is on the left. It's from the trim. It's a merged product from trim. Now, the rain asymmetry and the wind asymmetry usually are not in the same sense. Remember, the rain asymmetry was left of track. The wind asymmetry is actually to the right of the track. And that's where the cold wake is being formed. The strongest cold wake is also to the right of the track. So this is actually a wind swath showing the maximum wind observed at any point during the passage of the storm. And we believe that this may be an indication of what the ocean forcing was, as opposed to looking at an instantaneous snapshot. But since we do have aircraft flying into the storms, it's a good check of the model to actually compare it with flight days in situ data. So this is using some preliminary SFMR data. And we have the Seaworth and the UMCM. This is a single swath from the southeast to the northwest. And I have the Japanese radar. That's here, this is the Japanese radar. And the UMCM produced radar. So the structure is pretty similar. Notice there's this double, this is eyeball and this kind of principal rain band out here. See that structure in the radar too. In terms of the wind, now the our eyewall was too large if you're looking at just this transect. And also if you look at the maps, our eyewall seems to be too large. And our storms are a bit too weak compared with SFMR. However, if you look at the outer wind field, so hurricane force is about here, here. So if you look at it that way, the radius of hurricane force winds is actually not bad. And the radius of gale winds, that's somewhere, well, at the end here, at the edge here, that's actually not bad. So even though we missed the peak intensity of the storm and the eyewall size, but the hurricane wind radii and the gale wind radii seem to be reasonably good. Okay, so now going into the ocean verification. And the first thing when you want to do verification is you have to have data. Now, I'm probably going to get myself into trouble here because when you look at the satellite data, what most of us have been looking at is this daily composite field, which is merging all of the satellite data available for a single day. What I did is I was looking at individual swaths, and I think they show a much colder cold wake. So here, the cold wake is about 26 degrees C. But if I look at the minimum of all of the individual swaths, then the cold wake seems to be closer to 25 degrees C. So, well, which is it? Well, what are you really looking at when you look at the minimum of all of the satellite swaths? Maybe looking at what's the actual cold wake before any recovery happens. So what's the impact of the typhoon before anything else moves around, before you get solar heating, you get flux from the atmosphere back to the ocean, you get inertial currents, and the cold wake starts to move even. Rosalinda showed that. So this may be an indication of what the typhoon actually did to the ocean. Now in the model, you also see that difference. This is looking at kind of a end of the track when it's making landfall in Taiwan, so the storm is gone. But if you compare it with the minimum over the whole forecast period, it looks like even in that short period of 1 or 2 days, the whole lake is already starting to recover. So if you're looking at daily composites, you may not pick up the actual coldest wave. Okay, so this is the satellite derived storm structure. So this is from the TMI rainfall estimates, and the EM apex floats are on top of that. We have EM apex floats on the right side and the left side of the storm, which you didn't have in Seablast, so we didn't really have that kind of data before. Now in the model, the first thing you can compare the eye is larger in the model, so that if you use the same float locations as the observed ones, you may be inside of the eye when the actual float was outside of the eye. So what I decided to do is grab model data so I can look at as many points as I want. But just imagine that I have this many EMA PEX floats across the model-derived store. Okay, so in these series of plots, the left side is from the EMA PEX data, and that's temperature, currents, meridional, and zonal and meridional currents. And this is the cold wake profile produced by the model. Now, what I want to point out here is that about in here is where the coldest part of the cold wave was. And in the model, that's about here. And that's over a time period of about 4 to 6 hours. That highlights that period where the coldest wave was. Now, after that period, you already start to have recovery. So if you're looking just once a day, and even daily average, you're not going to see the full response of the ocean due to the typhoon before any recovery happened. Okay, so this is right of storm. I also look at one left of storm. So left of storm, there's less cooling, and the inertial currents are not as pronounced. And the model is also able to show that. Even though the mixed layer depth decreases a little bit, there's not much cooling and there's not much upwelling. And there are some inertial currents. One thing I'm going to point out is that these inertial currents are propagating downward by the end of the forecast, but we only have a 5-day forecast, so we can't look as far out in time. But they are propagating downward through the thermocline. Okay. Now, talk a little bit about wave model fields. This is the swath of significant wave height produced by the UMCM. And also, I put the mooring locations on there. And this is where we would want to have a mooring. So put a symbol of want. And locations I'm focusing on are the northern ACES buoy mooring. And that's was closer to the storm track. And also this want location. Actually, for Maggie, we did have this northern ACES buoy in that want location. But I haven't looked at that case as much. Okay. So what do the wave fields look at that at those locations? So wind speed is actually not very different. The wind speeds experienced by those locations. But the wave fields are quite different. The significant wave height is lower at the ACES location. Significant wave height peaks a few hours after the wind peak at the wanted location. And the direction has, the direction shifts in both cases, but it's more of an abrupt shift at the peak significant wave height location. The period is higher at the significant wave height location. Notice that the peak of the period is before the peak of the significant wave height. So you're actually seeing waves propagating ahead of the storm before the peak winds arrive, and these are probably more mixed in with wind-generated waves as opposed to a swell propagating ahead of the storm. Wavelength shows the same idea. So okay, some conclusions about the verification. The intensity in the high-resolution coupled models is way better than global models. And that's very important for determining the forcing on the ocean. The asymmetry of wind and rain is captured compared with the observations, but our eyewall is a bit too large, actually about twice as large as from the radar. But our hurricane force and gale force wind radii are not bad. Now, the vertical structure compares well with EMA PEX. Now, remember, there are details. EMA PEX is actually drifting westward and northwestward. The wave fields will be verified against the observations once available. So I guess the A4 GUI is available, and the ACES is coming up in a few months. We'll have that, those data to compare. Data and analysis plan. Well, by late June, we'll be able to submit our latest forecast runs, including this one from FINAPI, also from Malacas and NEGI. We're working on forecasts for those. And the next phase of this is kind of making a unified reanalysis of the ocean and atmosphere and the waves together. There are plenty of reanalysis products of either atmosphere or ocean or waves separate, so we want to do them all together. The first stage of this is kind of a simulation stage, where you would use global analysis, like such as the FNL analysis, maybe UCMWF analysis, also with high pump analysis in the ocean. And those would be used as the boundary conditions. And in these cases, we'd be able to run more than the five-day forecast that we did operationally. Okay, eventually, we want to use data simulation in both the atmosphere and the ocean, and preferably with the waves, too, using all available ITOP observations. So that's kind of the ideal outcome from ITOP, because it really is an unprecedented data set that can be used for analyzing the atmosphere and ocean across the interface. And what we really would need is a convenient way to access, say, all of the data at a particular day, as opposed to having to access each observation separately. So it would be much easier to be able to get all of it kind of in bulk. Okay, so that's all I've got. Thank you for listening.
In your model, I noticed that the phase of inertial waves seems to be very close to the observations from the geomatics, and I wonder what's the magnitude of the inertial waves compared with the observations. The second question is whether you see jets that we observe in the geomatics in your model.
Okay, my PowerPoint is gone. For the first question about the strength of the inertial waves, it seems to be about 1.5 to 2 meters per second peak from the EM apex and also from the model. Now, there's actually a bit of a timing difference because of the timing of the storm in the model and the real storm, and also the ACES buoys, or the ACES floats. EM apex floats are moving westward, and in the model, we're looking at a fixed point. So otherwise, we may be crossing different ocean features. We could move it, but we want to remember, we've got to look storm relative. You can't look at a model point that's inside the eye wall and compare it with EM apex point, which is in the principal rain band 50 kilometers outside of the eye wall. By the time you do that storm relative correction, if you propagate the model observation point, then you're probably looking at different ocean features. So that's a complication. And about the jet, I haven't looked at it. I think the way to look at that is to do a bandpass filter, filter out anything said less than 36 hours time scale, and you can see if it shows up. I don't really know if it shows up yet. I haven't looked at it. Yeah, both good ideas. So I'd like to talk to you about that, how we can incorporate it. Really wish we had a dual Doppler radar. Use what we have.
Okay, well, if there are any more questions, then that's the end of this session.
It's 8 past 11, and our next session is supposed to start at 11:15, so I'm going to take a vote of who wants to take a very short break and start our next session, or should we take the half an hour break that is scheduled and push everything by about a half an hour? Also, there's an extra talk at the next session, so that would really be pushing us by at least 45 minutes. So, who wants to take a short break? And who wants to take a longer break? Okay, short break it is. Be back.
30 minutes?